Broadcasting at the speed of sound. Webmasterradio.fm, the flamethrower. Webmasterradio.fm, we're everywhere.
Welcome to Dishumix. The soap opera for the Internet Society.
Don't you love being in the know?
The continuing saga of the Internet economy.
Get the lowdown on the famous people in the industry.
Get behind the scenes. Get the real deal. What makes the Titans tick?
Get the whole mix. The Dishumix.
Now, here's your Dishumix host, Susan Bratton.
Welcome to Dishumix. This is Susan Bratton, and I have two great guests for you today. Our show is called Mentor Capital and the Love Mark Effect, and I am live from the Saatchi & Saatchi headquarters in New York City today with Kevin Roberts, the global CEO of Saatchi & Saatchi. We're going to talk to him first, and then we'll have joining us Heidi Roizen, the managing partner of Mobius Venture Capital. I also wanted you to know that next week we have Ted McConnell. He runs innovation for Procter & Gamble, and Jonathan Nelson, the founder of Organic, a leading interactive agency in the San Francisco area. That show is going to be called Earballs and Eyeballs, and it's about merging music and digital marketing. You know that normally if you listen to my show, I run right into a news segment now with the belief that all of us are almost always too busy to keep up with the things that are occurring in our industry. But today I decided to skip it because I don't think there's a single person out there who isn't listening to the news this week. Between the Google and YouTube acquisition and all of the SEC shakeups that are happening, I'm sure you're tuned in. So we're just going to spend all of our time with Kevin and Heidi today. I just wanted to let you know as well that coming up in November we have Robert Scoble, the Scobalizer. Steve Wozniak joins us. Scott Donaton from Ad Age, Jeremy Allaire, and Esther Dyson. So on with the show, I'd like to welcome Kevin Roberts. Hi, Kevin.
Hi.
So it's great to have you, and it's great to be in your beautiful, very color-coordinated, love-filled office here up on the 16th floor. You're somewhat sandwiched between Tribeca, Greenwich Village, a little south of the Meatpacking District. How long has this office been here?
We've been here for 20 years. I think the Saatchi & Saatchi predecessors were very prescient in thinking that downtown in the mid-80s was going to turn into a bohemian creative hotspot. At the time, it wasn't quite as salubrious, but it's a tremendous spot, you know, now for the creative community.
And do you live down in this area?
Yeah, I live two blocks into Tribeca on North Moore and Hudson. I live in the same building as Robert De Niro and Harvey Keitel. It's where they put out to pasture all the big, fat, old, bald, white guys who like to wear black T-shirts. In fact, Billy Joel's just moved in, too. There you go. You know, so we're very consistent in our branding.
And do you hang out with those guys and have cocktails in the afternoons?
We don't have cocktails. We drink things like Guinness and Bohemian, stuff like that, you know.
But you do hang out with them.
No, they're just movie people, you know. I'm far too creative to hang out with the movie people.
So if you're too creative to hang out with the movie people, who do you hang out with?
Actually, I've been hanging out with a lot of rugby people lately because I've just become chairman of USA Rugby this weekend and very passionate about trying to bring rugby to the forefront of the U.S. It would be great for the U.S., because we're the reigning Olympic champions, you know, the U.S. We won Olympic rugby in 1920 and 24. Not many people know that. And it hasn't been played there since. But it would be great to take rugby forward, because the U.S. have very few sports, team sports, that they can compete internationally in, right? Because baseball, basketball, NFL, these are local-only sports. So I've been hanging out with a lot of rugby people lately.
So a lot of us who don't follow rugby don't really understand how it compares to other sports. Why rugby? Why do you love that?
There's a great... First of all, you know, rugby is authorized violence, so that appeals to a lot of us Neanderthal types. And it is a fantastic team game. You know, you can play... You don't have to be a 6'7" giant, and you don't have to be able to run 40 meters in 4.2 seconds. There's positions on the field that anyone can play. It involves... ball handling skills, a lot of team spirit. There is a special rugby camaraderie around the world, a special feeling amongst the rugby community that I think guys in particular find very appealing. Women play rugby too. In fact, the U.S. are ranked in the top five globally in rugby. It's a shame we're not on TV, because you would see that Susan would be pretty much in demand as a rugby player. If you think of a tremendous basketball player with great athletic kind of pole vaulting build, that's what she's got. She'd be good at rugby.
So the Amazonian effect works well in the world of rugby.
Yeah, not only in the world of rugby, but it certainly works in the world of rugby, yeah.
You started out on the board of the New Zealand All Blacks. That was kind of your first foray into the world of rugby, and now you're the ambassador for rugby to the United States. Is that what was the exact phrasing you said?
No, chairman of U.S. rugby.
Chairman of U.S. rugby.
Yeah, so we're about to take the game professional in the U.S., which is what New Zealand did about 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we have a fantastic grassroots game. There are 70,000 players already in America. Mm-hmm. They play West Coast, East Coast, a great enclave in Colorado. So it's a pretty cool time, really.
Did you fall in love with rugby as a lad in England, or did you happen to fall in love with it when you moved to New Zealand?
I've been playing rugby since I was 11 in the UK, so it's been a long, long haul. I've played in a lot of countries.
And it still keeps you feeling boyish.
Yeah, it doesn't do much for my nose, which has been broken about 16 times, but now it gets fixed very quickly.
Your nose doesn't look like it's ever been broken. It looks good to me. Well, I want to, just for those who haven't really followed your career, you know, everyone knows your name. Everybody knows Saatchi. But you started out in working for Mary Quant in the 60s. Mary Quant was a very famous cosmetics producer and fashionista, and she really kind of embodied that 60s style, a little psychedelia, very bold colors. How did you get a job there, and what was the job that you had?
I started working for Mary when she moved into the cosmetics business out of fashion in 1966. I moved there, I think, in 67. I was a brand manager responsible for taking cosmetics into various European countries out of swinging London. It was a job to die for, right? I mean, London, swinging London, the Carnaby Street of the 60s was where it was all happening. It was where all the music was happening, you know, the Beatles, the Stones, Liverpool, and so on. It was where poetry was happening. It was where fashion was happening. And so London really led the way, the British invasion. Mary was at the leading edge of that. Cosmetics was a tremendous fun. It's still a business I'm passionate about. It was a fun business, great way to meet chicks, and a great way to travel. Tremendous marketing. I mean, I worked for three women, so I learned a lot about relationships. I learned a lot about connectivity. I learned a lot about creativity. And my kind of leadership and management style has been influenced dramatically by working in a very fast-paced environment. You know, the average product life cycle was 9 months, kind of a precursor for the internet today, and working for and with very creative women. So the value of emotional connectivity was impressed upon me very early.
How do you know when you're connecting emotionally with someone today? And how did you learn that skill?
Yeah, it's really on how you feel. I mean, a lot of people, you know, talk about what people say and what people do and how to read body language and all that kind of stuff. I think the critical thing that you need is this magical, mystical thing called empathy, you know, which means you've really got to feel the atmosphere, the ambience, the temperament, the pace of the other person. Women do this intuitively, of course, you know, pretty well, but they also do it habitually and deliberately. Men tend to spend more time talking, and women spend the time what you're doing, which is listening and clucking sympathetically, and thereby making your own mind up, and just through that very nature influencing me to go into a certain position.
So you're saying if men would spend more time getting out of their own head and into the heads of others, they could learn that empathetic connectivity that has worked for you and served you well in your career.
Yeah, I think we've all moved now into an age of inclusion where more and more of our consumers are female, more and more of our youth are driven by greater senses of equality, divergence, and inclusion. More and more executives, you know, at Saatchi, more than two-thirds of our executives are female. there doesn't seem to be, you know, there seems to be certainly a lot of people putting pressure on the glass ceiling when you look at, you know, these kind of women who are out there making it in every discipline, particularly in the creative disciplines. So I think it's about and, not either or. You know, I mean, there's a big debate now going on at Hewlett-Packard, right, about Fiorina and about Pat Dunn and so on and so forth, and Fiorina's new book, the new bleat and whinging kind of excerpts that I've seen. And I think it's really much more about and. You need balance. You need males and females. You need young and old. You need tall and small. You need, you know, every kind of demographic, every kind of ethnic person there, because that's the world and the population that we're now living in. So it seems to me that if you can represent them in your leadership group, you'll probably be a more holistic. You'll certainly have better meetings rather than having five guys just yelling at each other and trying to overrule the other. And you'll get to a more productive place, I think.
So you have, I totally agree with you. As a matter of fact, I work on the boards of a number of early stage companies in the Silicon Valley, and often I'm encouraging the CEOs, one is a female CEO, the rest are male, and I'm often encouraging them to get more women in early on. They'll start with the first 5 or 10 people, and they'll typically be male, and I say, whew, your next ad has to be a chick, or these guys aren't going to want to come to work. It's boring. You need that diversity.
I just met this morning with a fantastic biometric company called Pay by Touch, which is run by John Rogers out of San Francisco, and they've just brought on board John Costello, who's one of the great marketing guys, you know, from Yahoo and PepsiCo and Home Depot and so on and so
forth.
He's
a lovely man. He actually keynoted an ad tech, as did you.
So yeah. I really like John, right? Yeah. And he was here today, and John Morris, who's ex-IBM, on the sales guy. But the critical person in their whole tool is Caroline McNally. Mm-hmm. Caroline McNally was the senior VP of marketing at Visa, and she is the glue, because you get all these Johns, right? and they're smart ass, right? Smart ass. And they're all full of ideas and dynamism. And at the end of the meeting, Caroline brings it all to the right place, figures out who does what, and moves us all forward into one coherent unit. And I think that Rogers and these guys recognize that, and she was a very, very early employee. And I think that the challenge for all of us is how do we keep these very smart women inspired, nourished, engaged, infused, and growing, particularly as they hit, you know, their 30s and 40s and the kids and husbands and challenges, et cetera, all play a part in peers and so on. How can the new world really inspire them? Because continuity is an important part of any business, right? Mm-hmm. How can we inspire them to keep growing is, I think, one of the greater leadership challenges business is facing today.
Well, one of the major tenets of your new book, which we're going to talk about next, are vital elements called mystery, sensuality, and intimacy. We're going to take a commercial break, and then we're going to come back and talk about things like that. Stay tuned, everyone, and we'll be back with Kevin Roberts.
Sit tight and don't move.
Pitchy mix.
We'll be back after this short break.
Fantastic.
You have arrived
at the destination for education and entertainment.
Webmasterradio.fm.
Because not everyone's last name is Gates.
Webmasterradio.fm. We're everywhere.
AdTech New York.
AdTech New York.
The number one event for interactive marketing takes place November 6th through 8th. AdTech New York will feature groundbreaking sessions, hands-on technology showcase, advanced networking opportunities, and as always, hot, hot, sizzling parties. Hear the speakers, meet the exhibitors, and be part of tomorrow's buzz in today's digital world. From the alley to the avenue, it's AdTech New York, November 6th through the 8th. For more information, go to ad-tech.com.
Ad-tech.com.
Google AdSense, how do I earn from thee? Let me count the ways. Google, you enable me to show targeted ads complementing my site so my visitors keep clicking throughout the day and night. It was so easy to apply and select the ad formats I liked. Since I've discovered AdSense, I've been filled with delight. So earn more with matching ads, and you too can discover how. Just visit google.com/AdSense now.
Attend the public relations event of the year, the 2006 PRSA International Conference, benchmarking your public relations strategies with the best. Conference registration gets you insider access to dynamic speakers and unparalleled strategies and networking events. Register at PRSA.org to receive a $100 early bird discount off your registration. Qualified non-members will receive a bonus one-year PRSA membership. Visit PRSA.org for details. WebmasterRadio.fm, the official radio network of the 2006 PRSA International Conference.
Oh, my song, right. I know. I don't like it.
Speaking of a girl named Susie. Yeah, yeah. Speaking of a girl named Susie. Yeah, yeah.
This is Susan Brett. Welcome to the new world. Madonna. The hottest woman in the world. Bounce a quarter off those buns. Madonna.
Speaking of a girl named Susie. Yeah, yeah. Speaking of a girl named Susie.
Women love a good dancer, and they love a good kisser. I like that. Dude, you are so cool. Isn't that the funniest thing, Smoocher?
Speaking of a girl named Susie. Yeah, yeah. Speaking of a girl named Susie. Yeah, yeah.
Dishy Mix.
Thursdays at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific.
Only on WebmasterRadio.fm.
I always liked my name, but now I'm having second thoughts. I'm going to change my name.
Wizards, rainmakers, rock stars, gorillas, and gurus. WebmasterRadio.fm. Come visit our magical Webmaster Wonderland. We got a mouse, too. WebmasterRadio.fm. We're everywhere.
Now, back to
Dishy Mix.
Get the whole mix, the Dishy Mix.
Only on WebmasterRadio.fm. Now, here's your Dishy Mix host, Susan Bratton.
I'm here, and I'm with Kevin Roberts, the global CEO of Saatchi & Saatchi, and he was giggling at my dorky intro. Kevin, what you don't understand is that Mark Winter, our producer, he takes snippets from every show, and then he stitches them all together to make me sound like a goofball, because he knows that'll entertain everyone else. But he doesn't, you know, he's done a nice job for me over the years. So speaking of putting things together, your first book was called Peak Performance, Business Lessons from the World's Top Sporting Organizations. So in an early time, you were taking some of your life learning from the world of sports. What are some of the biggest life lessons you could impart to our listeners today from that book?
I think the two critical things were that to be successful, it is not about management, which I guess you could define as doing things right, nor is it about leadership, which I guess you could define as doing the right things. Those two really are table stakes. What we found that you had to be well managed, you had to have good leadership at the top, but to win sustainably over time, day in, day out, quarter after quarter, year after year, you had to have inspirational players at every level of the organization. And the whole command and control, bureaucratic, political model that most of American businesses run by wouldn't work. It was really about unleashing your people to be the best they can be against a shared dream. The other thing that we found vital to success was that the more you could feel like a family, the more successful you'd be. The great organizations that kind of survived for 80, 90 years felt like a family and performed like a team. So they beat a team, they beat a community, they beat any kind of other mobile.
I'm going to turn your mobile phone off. You keep telling us about Peak Performance.
So the area that we found of most use was that family as a metaphor for behavior was core. And obviously it's a metaphor because most families tend not to fire their father, although some do, and most tend not to close down their Denver office again, but some do. But if you could feel the things like loyalty, sacrifice, if you could be demanding yet caring, which is the key to a great family, and a lot of companies didn't have the caring part.
So it was
2 years ago that you came out with Love Marks. That was your second book. And then you came out with Sissimo, was it last year? 2005. So you've been, and now you have in your hand, I've touched it for a minute, but I noticed that you stole it right back from me, the very first print copy of your newest book, Love Marks, The Effect. Tell us what happened with you, with all this incredible outpouring of content and ideas. Where did all this come from, and does it all hang together thematically? Give us your story.
It all started, yeah. I guess the driving motivator at the beginning was fear, sheer naked fear that brands were dying. So where would that leave Saatchi & Saatchi? I figured it might leave the company short of a client or two and me short of a job. So we were looking at brands being turned into commodities. We were looking at retailers, you know, ruling the universe, price and value being everything. And I thought, man, there has to be something else. And so, you know, I started thinking about what came after brands. And I actually came up with the wrong idea. I came up with an idea called Trust Marks and said, man, if you could create loyalty, trust forever for a brand, that would be a great thing. And I was very excited about it. And at the time, Alan Weber was running Fast Company. And you'll remember Alan was an inspiration to many of us in business. And Alan said, we're looking for something new in marketing and branding. What do you got? And I said, I got the great idea. So Alan came down into this office that you're in, and I was very excited about it because here we're getting the founding editor, you know, leaving the hallowed halls of Boston to come down to us poor people, peasants in New York. And I gave him the big thing and gave him the big story and came up with Trust Marks, and he told me it wasn't enough, and he packed off and left me. So I was devastated. So I went home that night. My wife was in New Zealand. I was in my apartment on my own. Nobody loved my ideas, so I opened a bottle of Bordeaux, as you do. I had a piece of paper in front of me and pen, as you do as well, and started doodling around. I was thinking, you know, nobody loves me and all that. So I opened a second bottle, 3 o'clock in the morning, and drew a heart. And as I drew the heart, it sat next to the word Mark. And I just crossed out trust, and I thought, I got it. You know, it's about love marks. I mean, love is the deepest emotion of all. Love is multi-purpose. I mean, we do love stuff. We talk about loving places, loving holidays, loving brands, loving shoes, loving restaurants, loving chefs, loving movies. You know, then I went to bed at 3 o'clock, woke up next morning just anxious to see if it still worked.
You weren't even hungover after
no,
those two bottles
hungover.
Of Bordeaux?
No, I wasn't hungover. Too excited. I called Alan up straight away. I said, I got it, love marks. He said, yes, you have. So there I had inspiration from a journal, which is kind of a unique occurrence, right? Doesn't happen often. And there we delved into research and data and started doing the hard yards. We discovered mystery and sensuality pretty quickly, that these were things they didn't teach you at MBA school and you didn't learn in Cincinnati and places like that, but that they were integral to those brands and experiences that meant more, right? Then we discovered that really, some brands were irreplaceable, but love marks were irresistible. Mm. Think about the iPod. You can replace the iPod with any MP3 player you want. Some of them, the batteries will work, but you would never dream of doing that. The iPod's irresistible. You want to lick it. You want to sleep with it. You never leave home without it. And then
now that it has your Dishy Mix show on it.
Yeah, there you are.
Now, full of love. Not only do you love it, but it's full of love.
Quite right. And then we discovered intimacy as the final kind of missing link, which is this whole empathy story we were talking about before. So over the last 6 or 7 years, we've kind of worked very hard on this love marks thing, and it took us a long time because people are frightened of it. You know, I mean, think of your personal relationships. You withhold love quite a lot, and you're frightened of falling into love, and, you know, it has some consequences sometime. And interestingly, every time I spoke to a CEO and asked him, you know, do you want your brand or company to be respected or loved, I got the same answer, man, I want to be loved. Mm-hmm. But you talk to the marketing group and they were terrified because you can't measure it, you can't predict it, how do you know if you've got it, oh my God, it's so emotional, yada, yada. But now we've moved on, and now the new book, Love Marks Effect, is really about, well, the last 3 or 4 years in the marketplace, here is the stories of what has actually happened.
So give us an example of a few of the brands that you cover in the Love Mark Effect.
I think as I hastily look back at the book, because I wrote this a year and a half ago, right? And as you said, it's the first time I've seen the book in all its glory. But a classic was Diesel, Renzo Rosso, who just published his own book called 50, about 50 years of Diesel, spoke in there about how Diesel was a love mark and how he'd built this on mystery, trust, and sensuality. We talk a lot about the Toyota Prius, which has all elements of a love mark into it. You know, a great car, great performance, great value, great economy, and you know what? You're actually doing something good for the planet and making the world a better place. We obviously talk about Mary Quant, how she started, and how, for me, Mary Quant will always be a love mark. And there's stories, hundreds and hundreds of stories throughout the book where consumers talk about their own love marks, because consumers are really engaged in this idea, whether it's Herman Miller furniture, whether it's Payless shoes, whether it's, for many people, Walmart, which I know might set some people thinking, but, you know, Walmart has, for about 120 million Americans, they really feel that Walmart has taken them to a place of choice that they would never have got to before, you know, Evian, Huffer, and so on. Swiss Army Knife, Avida.
So The Love Marks Effect is really a book that takes the original concept of creating a brand that people love and listing a series of great brands, as you have, and talking about the story of those brands and why they've created sensuality or intimacy or mystery and how that evokes love from their customers. In the book, you also include a 7-step guide to putting the Love Marks principles into service. Was it hard for you to boil that down to 7?
Yeah.
Was it like a clear 7, or was that an excruciating point for you?
Yeah, I didn't like doing it either, because it took all the mystery out of the process, you know?
Uh-huh.
Everyone asked me in the first time, well, you know, you wrote the book and you didn't say how to do it, and I said, of course not, because what I want you to do is to hire Saatchi & Saatchi, you idiot. So, but this time, people were just saying, listen, you have to show us how to get there. You have to take us on the journey. You have to tell us the steps. Then they also said, you have to show us how to measure it. You know, we now get it. We understand the concept. We've bought into the dream. But come on, enough. Don't be so coy now. Tell us how we can predict it, how we can measure it, what we have to do to get there. So we have done. So I didn't like doing that.
But no, you did it anyway.
But I did it because, unfortunately, we live in an era where the consumer's boss, right, and not me. So,
yep.
You know, that's what the consumers were saying, and that's what we've given them.
Well, your book comes out in December, and I know Love Marks was a bestseller, and this is, I'm absolutely sure, going to triple eclipse it, because it is I would buy that book just for how beautifully it's laid out. Your team's done a lush job with the design. It's very progressive looking and feeling, and it looks juicy and wonderful. So I'm really excited to have the opportunity to talk to you about it as you get the very first book in your hand today.
Well, Tom, thank you. That's so sweet. That's very nice. Tom Peters has been an inspiration to me and to many of us, you know, growing up.
Yeah.
And he constantly is. I mean, he just wrote a book called 60, with kind of 60 of his best thoughts. And he's such a revolutionary, and
yeah,
he really challenges everything.
Yeah.
One of the things he said is that design is at the heart of everything that we do.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we published this book, Derek Lockwood, our worldwide head of design, took responsibility for every page, every piece of typography, every illustration. And we've tried to make design central, because design is central to becoming a love mark. And you know what? Bad design costs as much as good design, so Right. Why not have great design?
I agree. We have only a few minutes left together. It goes fast, doesn't it? I just wanted to ask you some kind of crazy questions that were interesting to me as I've grown to know you and I've pored over your bio. You have a house here in Manhattan. We've talked about that. You also have a house in New Zealand, and you also have a house in Saint-Tropez. Tell me about those houses.
And last week I bought a house in Grasmere in the English Lake District,
really?
So which is the prettiest village in the whole of England.
And it's called what?
Grasmere, Grasmere. It's got great English pubs.
Oh, now you're talking. I love English pubs.
It's past Windermere and Rydalwater. It's right on the fells, just on national parkland. And I bought that because I was born up in the lakes, 57 years ago, and this is like going back to my roots. So, yeah, we have a house in Saint-Tropez, which is kind of a permission to misbehave. It's a tremendous part of the world to live in.
It's a gorgeous town, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
And it feels extremely chic and, you know, high-end world living kind of a place. I mean, everybody's beautiful, and it's great food, and it's a magical view from every direction.
I've been going there since 1975, mm-hmm. So it's kind of 30 years on, and we bought the place 2 or 3 years ago, right in the vineyards, 5 km from the port, and you get the best of all worlds, you know.
Are you growing grapes?
No, I'm imbibing them in great quantities.
Good, you're keeping the economy afloat.
I am. It's like boats, you know. It's best to have friends with boats,
yeah.
And so it's best to have friends with vineyards. Such and Such belongs now to the Publicis Group, right? We sold the company 5 years ago, so I have to be in Paris every month, which is not mm-hmm. the worst kind of duty, right?
Right.
I can see you. She's puckering up here in front of me going, yeah, shame. So whenever I'm in Paris, I take the Friday night flight down to Toulon and spend the weekend in Saint-Tropez, which is
nice.
Better than some of the options.
Absolutely. And does your wife travel with you? You're all over the world.
Yeah.
Are your kids out of school now? How old are your children?
So Rowena has, we have the franchise for MAC Cosmetics in New Zealand, and we're just
really?
Launching Jo Malone there.
Oh, my gosh.
We have a joint venture with Estee Lauder, so it's back to our because we met when we were at Mary Quant. You know,
oh, my gosh. You've been with your wife since the late 60s?
Yeah.
How nice.
Yeah. Yeah, same one, right? The same one.
Yeah,
and,
right.
And for us, MAC is the nearest thing to Mary Quant. It's,
yeah, beautiful.
It's today's Mary Quant Cosmetics. And it's, you know, it's for everyone, all races, all ages, you know, all colors, mm-hmm. all creeds, all religions, or whatever. It's very cool, very today. And Jo Malone is probably, I think, one of the most beautiful aesthetic gift, fragrance, candle experiences you can imagine. So Rose got 3 stores selling MAC and Jo Malone down in Auckland.
Mm-hmm.
But she travels whenever she can. For instance, we're going to Istanbul in November, where I'm giving
beautiful.
A speech on love marks, and we're introducing the book in Turkish. And, mm-hmm. and so the places that she wants to, she comes. The kids I have now, 3 in London and 1 in New Zealand.
Okay.
2 of them were in New York for the last year. And they had a year here in New York at film school and so on and so forth. And now they're back either in London or New Zealand. We're all heading to Milan to the Bulgari Hotel in a week and a half's time for my birthday, so the kids are coming over, so that's going to be
is that your 58th
quite a
now?
No, it's the 57th.
Yeah,
I'm already
coming
57
out.
Mentally, right?
In your mind, you're 57.
Yeah.
Got
actually,
it.
In my mind, I'm 23, but...
right. And so what will you do? So the kids are all going to join you. You're going to the Bulgari...
Yeah, which is a love mark of mine.
Oh, so Bulgari, the jewelry.
Right.
Now they have a hotel in Milan.
Run by a guy called Attilio, and this is the best spa. It's an old, old convent right in the middle of Milan, 100 meters from the Giorgio Armani store, but completely in its own grounds, all decorated by Bulgari. Beautiful wines, the most fantastic roast suckling pig you can imagine.
Oh, I love Italians make the best roast suckling pig.
The best.
Nobody makes it here. You can never find it on any menus. It's delicious.
Yeah,
I like the Spaniards make it really well,
and
too.
And the Spanish make it good, too.
Yeah.
The Italians, though, you have the advantage because you can drink a great Brunello or a Sassicaia with it. But we go there. Dolce & Gabbana have just opened a new restaurant in Milan called Gold.
Nice.
And Attilio's got us a table there, which for my 25-year-old daughter, because it's her birthday today,
oh.
Rebecca.
Happy birthday, Rebecca.
So it's her birthday today, and so she will be extremely stoked at going to the Dolce & Gabbana place, as you can imagine.
That sounds like a lovely and luxurious vacation, and you get to share it with your family. Well, happy birthday, Kevin. We wish you a wonderful time. It sounds like you have definitely set up a luxurious time. And thank you so much for sharing your time with us today, and good luck with Love Mark Effects. I know you won't need it. Everyone's going to buy it. And thank you for coming on the show.
Thanks very much.
We're going to go to a commercial break, and I'll be back, and you get to meet Heidi Roizen. Stay tuned.
Sit tight and don't move.
Dishy Mix.
We'll be back after this short break.
Fantastic.
Cyberspace, the final frontier. These are the voyages of your new business enterprise. Its ongoing mission to explore strange new domains, to seek out new sites and new monetizations, to boldly go where no one has gone before. Webmaster. WebmasterRadio.fm. So logical. You'll go out of your Vulcan mind.
WebmasterRadio.fm. We're everywhere.
3 a.m. traveling to a conference in Oklahoma City. Steve Talbot's Ford Escort radiator hose bursts near the town of Hooker. He types Hooker Escort Hookup into another local search engine's one-box search. He has a great time that he can't expense. TrueLocal.com. Two boxes, one click, great results.
AdTech New York.
AdTech New York.
The number one event for interactive marketing takes place November 6th through 8th. AdTech New York will feature groundbreaking sessions, hands-on technology showcase, advanced networking opportunities, and as always, hot, hot sizzling parties. Hear the speakers, meet the exhibitors, and be part of tomorrow's buzz in today's digital world. From the alley to the avenue, it's AdTech New York, November 6th through the 8th. For more information, go to ad-tech.com.
Ad-tech.com.
With over 30,000 clients and 8 years of experience, Westhost is not your basement hosting company. Starting at $3.95 a month, Westhost offers the lowest price virtual private server technology in the industry. Yet, they don't sacrifice their world-class data center or superior 24/7 client support. Sign up at Westhost.com today and get the hosting technology and real support your business needs at prices you can't find from other hosts. Westhost.com. That's Westhost.com. WESTHOST.com. When you expect more from your web host.
Now, experience the future of web design and development with a whole new level of efficiency, expressiveness, and simplified workflow. Introducing Studio 8, a compilation of the latest releases from Dreamweaver, Flash Professional, Fireworks, Contribute, and Flashpaper. Sure to inspire you to create superior online video sites and mobile content. And now, through this exclusive WebmasterRadio.fm offer, listeners can save a whopping $100 off Studio 8. Visit the online store at Adobe.com or contact Adobe Customer Services and provide promo code Webmaster Radio in order to receive your discount. Studio 8, your way to create.
Open your windows for a breath of fresh air.
WebmasterRadio.fm.
And hey, Mac, we're here for you too.
WebmasterRadio.fm. We're everywhere.
Make money now. Now. There's no time to waste.
Want to be ahead of the search engine marketing masses?
Here's your alternative.
Here's your alternative.
WebmasterRadio.fm now gives you an alternative to making the most money out of search. Webmaster Radio presents The Alternative. Join Jim Hedger and Kim Roach as they fill you in on the latest search engine news and help you discover the alternatives to search engines,
advertising,
revenue, and vertical. The Alternative. The Alternative. Beginning Thursday, October 12th at 5 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Pacific.
Right after Good Karma.
Only on WebmasterRadio.fm. We're everywhere.
Now, back to
Dishy Mix. Get the whole mix, the Dishy Mix.
Only on WebmasterRadio.fm. Now, here's your Dishy Mix host, Susan Bratton.
Welcome back. This Dishy Mix episode is called Mentor Capital and the Love Mark Effect, and this is Susan Bratton. I'm joined today by Heidi Royce and the managing partner of Mobius Venture Capital. Welcome, Heidi.
Thank you.
How are you today?
We're good today.
So you and I are talking. I'm in Manhattan today at the Saatchi headquarters. You're in Atherton,
I'm in beautiful Silicon Valley where it's gloriously sunny today and the future looks bright.
Beautiful. Well, let's see. Now, you've been with Mobius for a number of years, and you are sitting on a number of boards. Auction Drop is one, eCast,
right.
Perpetual
right.
Entertainment, and Reactrix. Those are the big four that you work right now?
Correct.
So I've seen Auction Drop kind of go through a retail strategy, but then maybe pull back on that. What's the status with that?
Yeah, I think the Auction Drop story is one that I think is pretty typical of a lot of Silicon Valley startups. You start thinking there's a business in one avenue, and what you discover, if you're lucky, is that there is a business. It's just in another avenue. When we first started Auction Drop, we really saw it as a conduit for, you know, the the consumer who doesn't want to get on to eBay to become a seller to use Auction Drop to perform those selling functions. What we found is some things that you know, that made that a little difficult to do. It's pretty difficult to mount a national campaign to try to build out retail stores. There's still an education process in terms of educating a consumer about what kind of products will sell on eBay and what creates a good return both for the consumer and for us. So we found that, you know, for the consumers who got it, they would be continuing to bring in repeat business, but educating the market was pretty difficult. We also had a relationship with UPS, which we continue to have through the UPS stores. And again, I think that, you know, having little tiny Auction Drop in between two big brands like UPS and eBay and trying to make all the pieces fit together proved to be pretty challenging. The good news is we discovered there are a lot of retailers who have some pretty great merchandise that for various reasons they cannot move through their own channel. And we became a back end for a number of large retailers who are using us as a, you know, as a point for returned merchandise. And, you know, as you know, the retailing market is very competitive. A lot of these retailers have very liberal return policies. And we're finding that these are wonderful goods that we can offer at great discounts. And the business has been growing rapidly as a result. So, you know, we're doing well over $1 million a month in revenue and growing nicely every month. And I think we've turned Auction Drop into a success story. So we're continuing to work on that.
So no surprise, the business model changed. That happens
all
the time.
Yeah, the business model changed.
Yeah. Now, have you ever gotten a really good deal on anything yourself through that
channel? I have, actually. I bought a plasma television last year for Christmas for my in-laws.
Nice.
It was a heck of a deal.
Good. And Reactrix is another company that you're on the board of that, you know, the listeners of Dishy Mix primarily come from the Internet, Web 2.0, media and marketing community, lots of ad agency people, et cetera.
Yep.
So Reactrix is something that would be interesting to people listening today. Tell us about that.
Yeah, we actually have two companies in the space that I would call out-of-home media network. And it's interesting to have two of them because I think that's one of the fun things about being a venture capitalist is when you're sitting on two boards and the companies have similar issues to address and similar opportunities, it's really great when you play that role of making the introductions and helping the companies think through these things and helping them work collaboratively even if their businesses are, you know, if their businesses have no formal relationship. So Reactrix and eCast are two companies that are both in the out-of-home media network. Reactrix, its model is that it operates a network of malls and theaters. I don't know if you've ever seen a Reactor, but they're a pretty wow experience if you have. It projects an image on the floor, but you can interact with that image. It's sensory perceptive. So, for example, you can have a soccer field on the floor with a ball, and if you kick, the ball will move as if it were a real ball. We have all sorts of fun content that we've created around games, around sports, around interesting visuals like koi ponds, you know, just anything you can imagine we can do. If you figure it's a television medium, but you also include reactivity, it's pretty incredible. And that has been installed in about 150 malls and theaters across America, and we're, of course, expanding that platform daily. So that's a really exciting one for us. The Arbitron results for this kind of thing have just been off the charts in terms of the kind of retention rates we get among the consumers remembering the brands and having a good relationship with the brand. And of course, one interesting thing about a media network like this is the ad content is the content. So unlike a lot of other networks where you have to actually you know, create content so you can carry an ad payload, the ads are so fun that consumers are happy to interact with the ads themselves, which makes it pretty compelling.
So one of the things that the media cognoscenti are talking about as a hot trend for 2007 is digital outdoor, and Reactrix really fits within that. It's maybe in a mall, but it's still digital outdoor. So I think that's going to continue to do very well.
Well, now, I think it's really interesting because you are seeing, you know, out of home. I think one of the challenges, and again, it's a challenge endemic to startup land is you got to hit it not too early and not too late. And I
right.
think with both Reactrix and eCast, one of the things that we have struggled with is the category out of home was under-resourced in the past. And now all of a sudden there's a big wave towards the out of home and towards interactive. Advertisers really want to see the responsiveness, to understand the effectiveness, to be able to have a direct relationship with those consumers. So, for example, on eCast, which is a network of approximately 8,000 broadband-connected touchscreen jukeboxes across bars and restaurants in America, what's interesting about that is you've got a color video touchscreen in a place of business, and you pretty much know what the demographic is, i.e. they're bars, so you kind of know, you know, you're dealing with a certain consumer of a certain age. We even have them typed by demographic. And because it's a touchscreen, you can do things like run contests, collect email addresses, collect lots of information about consumers. And one of the interesting things we found about consumers in both in the bars and restaurants as well as in the malls and theaters is they're receptive to interacting with media when they're out doing this sort of stuff. So we had we ran something on eCast where we had a phenomenal rate of return among users. I think we got 330,000 respondents over about a five-week period, you know, asking them to tell us about themselves. I mean, it's just, you know, kind of remarkable. So
well, now this
we're
is
excited
an
about what we're seeing out there.
So Dishy Mix is only part, you're only partly allowed to talk about business, and you've just you've exceeded your quota.
Uh-oh.
On
okay,
talking
I'll stop.
On pitching your companies. We want to talk about you, Heidi.
Okay. Well, I'm not as interesting as my companies, but
you
go
are.
Ahead.
You are. We'll be the judge of that, okay?
Thanks for letting me talk about the companies. I am pretty excited about them, as you can tell.
Yeah, we're going to edit all that out. No.
Okay. Damn.
No, I'm just kidding. All right, so here's a couple questions for you.
Sure.
I want to ask you, like, 10 questions, and, you know, since we only have a few minutes, let's kind of move through them, because I think they'll all be really interesting.
Sure.
The first one is that you started out at 13 years at TeaMaker. As I understand it, that was a family business, and then you moved to Apple before you got into the venture world. What was it that you think you learned at TeaMaker that helped you today as a venture capitalist?
Well, TeaMaker, you know, yes, a family business in the sense that my brother was the brilliant programmer that I got to be the counterpart to as the resident family MBA. What do you learn over 13 years starting as employee number one and growing to, you know, 100 people and going through tremendous ups and downs and near bankruptcies and huge wins? And, you know, it's the drama of the startup, and it's all those life lessons you learn about managing people and motivating people and motivating yourself and what excites you and what makes you happy in your daily job. So, I mean, I think that the takeaway I would have from that is after 13 years of being the CEO, I have tremendous empathy for the people who are CEOs today. And, man, it's a tough job. You know, I joke with my CEO sometimes when they say they're having a hard week. I say, yeah, and that's why you have the CEO job and I don't, because, man, that job is hard. VC is so much easier.
So you went to Apple, and we were running the developer relationship part of the business. Worldwide developer relations was what you ran. You didn't last very long there. What happened?
No, I lasted a year. I went into Apple. I think that the first point is, as a Mac developer, TeaMaker had been one of the first companies to develop products for the Macintosh way back in early 1984, and so I had been a longtime partner and critic of Apple, and I mean critic in all the positive as well as negative senses of the word. So it was a wonderful opportunity. It was sort of a Mrs. Smith goes to Washington opportunity for me to go to Apple and try to move the company in the right direction with respect to its relationship with the developer community. When I got there, I started the same day as Gil Amelio, and I left about 6 weeks after Steve came back, although Steve was not in the CEO position. I mean, just, you know, Next had been acquired, and Steve was around. Very tumultuous time for Apple. I had a one-year-old and a three-year-old at home, you know, whom I never saw. And we were going through a pretty dramatic change in the foundation of the business in terms of changing the operating system, you know, moving towards an operating system that at the time it was acquired didn't run on our microprocessors. And, you know, it was kind of one of those personal decisions where you say, I've had a really interesting year. I think I've done some good things here. But, you know, the big corporate environment and with all the changes Apple's going through, given where I am in, you know, my life with my kids and my family, it's probably just not the right place for me. So I had a, you know, I had a really interesting time there. I'm still a heavy Mac user, iPod user. I think Steve has done an amazing job with the company. So, you know, I'm still a huge fan. I just don't think it was a great fit for me in terms of what you do with your daily life.
You've really been a poster child for women in Silicon Valley, the chick side of the equation. For years and years and years, when someone wanted to get the female perspective, they called you Heidi. You've had incredible amounts of press coverage. Who else do you think are the women, the notable women in the, you know, tech community? Who are they today?
Well, I mean, I think it's one of the interesting things that we, you know, we chick VCs and chick entrepreneurs talk about is probably one of the things that makes us notable is that we don't think of ourselves as some sort of secret community or notable because we're women.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I get up every day and I go to work, I don't think about, I'm in a different place than the guys I compete with or in the guys that I work with. And in fact, I think most of us just don't think of ourselves as being any different. There certainly are things about being a woman entrepreneur or a woman VC that, you know, once in a while, yeah, you are different. But I think for the most part, you just think about yourselves like anyone else. We do have some groups. There are a number of us, Sonia Hoel at Menlo Ventures and Ann Winblad of Hummer Winblad. And, you know, we go off and go wine tasting once in a while and bitch about funny things that have happened to us or share war stories or gossip or do, you know, the things that probably the guys are doing out on the golf course. I think there are some great female entrepreneurs, Kim Polacy, Sandy Kurtzig from, you know, sort of a prior generation, Ellen Hancock, whom I met at Apple and, you know, who remains a good friend. There are certainly lots of women that I think are having a tremendous impact on Silicon Valley, Judy Estrin. I think there are a lot of women that are in very senior positions in some of the big companies, you know, Susan Decker at Yahoo or Sheryl Sandberg at Google, or, you know, there are lots of folks that I think are hugely impressive women that are also in senior positions that are not necessarily in the entrepreneurial or not perceived as entrepreneurs, that are doing great entrepreneurial things in these other companies.
Yeah, it is a shame, though. I think we need a new raft of, you know, Esther Dyson, Heidi Roizen, Kim Polizzi. Every one of you have been around for years now, and it doesn't seem like there are women coming up to kind of add in and not take your place, but, you know, the next generation. Missing. And I actually think that has nothing to do with the fact that there are women out there. It has everything to do with the media doing a crap-ass job covering successful women because they're there and they're not giving them any press like they used to 10 years ago.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I do see lots of women that are in the next generation. You know, again, this job affords me the luxury of being able to go hang out with the 20-somethings and 30-something women that are building the next wave of great technology companies or great companies. I think there are some really interesting companies. For example, Glam.com.
Mm-hmm.
We have a lot of women in the senior positions who are focused on women as the audience, and I think we'll see a lot of that. I mean, I think you've seen a current raft of the companies that are getting a lot of attention are focused on, you know, the youth segment of America as a customer base. But women and frankly, women my age are a very powerful demographic in terms of an audience. And I think very often you'll see that the people who are passionate about creating companies are themselves the demographic that they're trying to reach. So I think there are a lot of interesting companies out there that are being founded by women. I agree that the attention hasn't necessarily been there. I've been focused not only on women as entrepreneurs, but foreign-born entrepreneurs in some roles that I have in some volunteer organizations, the National Center for Women in Information Technology and the National Venture Capital Association. And we're trying to shed light and celebrate these stories and get attention for those women who have started companies, for those foreign-born entrepreneurs who have come in and built, you know, job creation and built amazing technologies that we use in our daily lives and have really contributed to the American economy. We want to make sure that people understand that, you know, there are huge segments of the population that are doing some pretty incredible things for us, and we should be sure that we're supporting their efforts.
Well, I think there are a few people who are probably gearing up to do something really incredible for you, because I understand that your 50th birthday is coming up. Is that right?
Oh, God, yes. I just figured out that my 50th birthday is coming up in 500 days, give or take a few days, and I've tried to decide, like, is that a lot or a little?
It doesn't matter whether it's a lot or a little. It's going to happen.
Yeah,
what are you going to do to celebrate the big 5-0?
I don't know.
Is your gorgeous husband going to come up with something for you?
Oh, my gorgeous husband. I don't know what he's going to do. Actually, his 50th is coming up in about 150 days. So I'm going to focus on his first, and then I'll turn to mine.
Well, I don't know if you heard Kevin Roberts earlier, if you were listening to the show before you got on, but he's taking his whole family to Milan to the new Bulgari Hotel and Spa. And
well,
so I think at the very least you should be able to top that.
We'll come up with something creative.
Now, we just have a minute or two left. We've got to end, and you've got a hard stop, too. But everybody needs to hear about your fabulous mansion in Atherton and the Garage Mahal and the funky little thing you did in the library with the books.
The crazy place.
Tell everybody that story.
Yeah, you know, a couple years ago, we decided, hey, life is short. And my husband and I, we love to cook and we love to entertain. And we just decided that... I don't know. What we needed was a party pad. My husband jokes, we have a vacation home. It's just 20 feet from our house. So we built this sort of Moroccan-themed thing that we call the Casbah that I found out, actually, my contractor called it the Garage Mahal. That was how it was listed on the design papers.
Mm-hmm.
But it's kind of a fun building. We use it for parties. We actually, Stephen Levy just wrote a book about the iPod, and we're having a book launch party for him in 2 weeks, and we host the Estee Forum Visionary Awards here every June, and have offsites for companies, have Halloween parties for the kids, just kind of have a fundraiser for refugee relief coming up in a couple weeks. So we definitely make good use of the place, but we try to, have a good time and recognize while you're, pounding your brains out, working every day, trying to make these companies successful, once in a while you got to sit back and do something else.
In the remaining, 17 seconds we have on the show, describe the toilets in the bathroom in the Garage Mahal.
Well, I'll just encourage everyone, you'll just have to show up here sometime, but my husband does have a urinal, and I will just say that there are some colorful characters who are target tiles in the urinal, but we'll leave that to your imagination.
Well, for those listeners who can support the Silicon Valley, it was the software?
Yes, the Software Development Forum, SD Forum. Every year their event here in June is just a super fun event.
Or support one of Heidi's many philanthropic endeavors. Maybe you, too, can figure out who you can pee on in Garage Mahal.
Perfect.
We're going to sign off. We are, I can't believe it, but out of time. Thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Thank you. It was really a pleasure.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, Heidi. And all the best to both you and your husband for wonderful birthdays. And this is Susan Bratton.
Thank you.
And
much
we'll be back. It's my pleasure. We'll be back next week. Eyeballs and Earballs, Merging Music in the Digital Marketing World with Ted McConnell from Procter & Gamble and Jonathan Nelson from Organic. I'll see you next week.